Good evening. We are in lesson 5 of the study of the Christian responsibility to the poor. And what we have acknowledged and supported in the Bible thus far, He cares about the poor. We saw in the first century church how they remembered the saints. We saw three congregations, the congregation at Jerusalem, congregation at Antioch, and the congregation at Macedonia, all collecting money for the needy saints. We saw Paul himself asking people to remember the poor in Galatians 2, verses 9 and 10. And we needed to leave a little bit for them to eat. We did see in Deuteronomy 23, let's go there. I want to just go to a few scriptures and when we recap. Deuteronomy 23, we got to try to get a true understanding of what God expected of people and expected of people who were to help the poor. Remember, the biggest problem that we've had is we had to try to identify who the poor was. Well, God is very consistent throughout the Bible in identifying who the poor were. In Deuteronomy 23, notice what it said in verse 24 in 25. It said, "When thou comest into thy neighbor's vineyard, then thou mayest eat grapes thy fill at thine own pleasure, but thou shalt not put any in thy vessel. When thou comest unto the standing corn of thy neighbor, then thou mayest pluck the ears with thine hand, but thou shalt not move a sickle to thy neighbor's standing corn." Whenever God fed people in the wilderness, and He fed them with manna, didn't He? How much manna did He give them at any given time?
Enough for that day.
For that day. As a matter of fact, He commanded them to not take more than what would be required to fill them that day. And when they did, it rotted. And He made sure that that was not going to happen. We see that same concept here, don't we? He wanted to take care of the poor, but He didn't want to enact a support system by which that they would be able to store up these things and kind of live a lifestyle of living off other people. He said, you feed them that day, but make sure they don't start gathering into buckets and carrying back and that kind of thing. He didn't want people to go hungry, but that is as far as He went. And so as we continued on in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, we saw Solomon make many references in the book of Proverbs about how to have kindness upon the poor. And if you did not, he used several places that it would bring reproach upon your Maker, which is God Himself. And so as we concluded last time, we tried to try to put a bundle around what it means to help the poor. And so if we go to Romans chapter 12, and we'll go a couple of other places, but if we go first to Romans chapter 12, he makes a statement in verse 13 as he's talking about the ministries there. That's what he's talking about, all the in verse 12, all the different things there that people can do and the talents that they have. One of those was in verse 13. It said, distributing to the necessity of the saints. And we talked about that. Necessity of the saints means, what does it take? What is absolutely necessary for someone who is in a famine or who is hungry to live? And that's not giving them abundance, right? You're not giving to someone who doesn't absolutely have to have it. When we went into Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 5, he talked about that same concept with widows. 1 Timothy chapter 5, he started all the way back to verse 3. And he said, honor widows that are widows indeed. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. Notice what he says in verse 5. Now she that is a widow indeed, desolate, trusteth in God, continueth in supplication and prayers night and day, but she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. He goes on, and these things give in charge that they be blameless. If any provide not for his own, and especially for of his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken in the number under 80 years old, having been a wife of one man, of good rapport, of good works, if she'd been brought up children, if she'd lodged strangers, she's washed the saints' feet, she relieved the affliction, if she diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having a damnation, because they have cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. In other words, help those that, as he uses the word there in verse 5, that are destitute. Those that are truly not capable of taking care of themselves. Widows indeed, very old, no family to take care of them. And in fact, if we go over to James chapter 1, he gives us that clear indication of what he calls true religion in verse 27. He says, pure religion is undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. Fatherless being orphans, correct? If you look at an orphan, they're very young. They can't fend for themselves. They have no way. They're poor. They're basically dependent upon other people. And again, he talked about the widows here as we understand who that is. And if you go on over to James chapter 2, look what he says in verse 15 and 16. If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one say, and one of you say unto him, depart in peace, be ye warm and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not the things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? In other words, if you're starving, you're poor. You have nothing to eat, feed that person. That's what constitutes the poor. That's what God says the poor is. And when you couple that with 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, we see God always desired people to fend for themselves and to work, or if they're incapable of working for some reason, then they are to be met and taken care of. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, he goes into this long little statement here beginning in verse 6. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly, and not after the tradition which he received of us. For yourselves know how ye ought to follow us, for we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you, neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor and travailed night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. So he's even saying here that if you're not working and you're kind of mooching off people, that you're walking disorderly. He uses that example there. Now, when he said up here in verse 9, not because we have not power. He talked about in verse 8, he didn't basically get on a support system because he wanted to be the example. But he said, not because they didn't have power. In other words, they didn't have the power to do so. Because those that were preaching the gospel, working like they were working, weren't they? They weren't hanging out all the time expecting handouts. They were actually working. And he's another example of saying it was okay for them to support them because basically they were missionaries. But he didn't want to do that because of the example that it would be setting. Now, we have a commandment that we are to help the poor. And we see examples in Acts where they took up collections for needy saints. They were famine. They were basically starving to death. They sold all things in Acts chapter 2 and had things in common so that people didn't have need, right? They weren't going hungry. The question we should understand is not, do we need to help the poor? I think absolutely we need to, because God provided for those in the Old Testament. We see in the New Testament where it was expected as well. But the problem is, who is poor? That's what we started out asking. We saw two examples in as we started this thing out. Looked at the widow that only had two mites that she threw in her all her living. She was very poor, wasn't she? And we saw in the Old Testament where they made provision for those who were very poor to only do like half of the offering for to the priest. So the problem we have then is, we have a commandment to help the poor, but the problem is who is the poor? According to what God says is poor. And then we have to try to remove society's definition of what is poor in relation to what people say is poor. We need to know what God said is poor. So if you take a look at the United States, poverty in the United States, poverty according to a book is written by Michael Zwig, What's Class Got to Do With It, in 2004, defined poverty is defined as a state of one who lacks a usual or socially acceptable amount of money or material possessions. That's the key. Who lacks usual or socially acceptable amount of money. What's sociably acceptable? That's how they define poor now. What does everybody else have compared to those? Let's give them a reasonable amount of that. Especially what that's saying. In the United States, the most common measure of poverty is the poverty threshold. You might have heard that. It's defined, you hear it on the news all the time. It's set by the U.S. government, and it says this measure recognizes poverty as a lack of those goods and services commonly taken for granted by members of the mainstream society. Again, muddling the water to what really is poor. Today, in 2011, or last year in 2011, the government's definition of poverty is based on a total income received of $22,350. That might have been the amount that my mother was talking about earlier, that you get a discount if you don't make over $22,350. That's the poverty line. It also, according to the 2007 census, it said that 5.8% of all people that are married, that live in families, meet this category. 26.6% of all persons who are single parents households meet this, and 19.1% of all persons living alone meet this. Now, it says the definition is dependent on the society you live in. In other words, poverty is relative. What do they say in other countries, third world countries, about the United States? Rich. We go, are you kidding me? We live paycheck to paycheck. You're telling us that we're rich? It's all dependent upon, to quote this individual, dependent upon the society you live in. And this is what's interesting. There really was no such thing as poverty until the Kennedy-Johnson administration decided to declare war on it. You know why there was no such thing as poverty? Because they didn't know how to measure it. We knew what poor was. We knew when people were relatively poor, but poverty is a definition. It said it existed but had no definition. The poverty line was created to measure the progress on the war of poverty. It says, but unfortunately, however well off one is, there are always economic laggards. In other words, they're always that lag behind what people would call is not poor. It says, it is strange that today someone with a color TV, basic cable, internet, pay-as-you-go cell phones, electric refrigerators, and access to medicine schools would ever be seen as poor. It said here, not even the richest persons 100 years ago would be able to have any of these. So does it start to understand how we don't understand who the poor is? You don't think about it, do we? You just don't think about it. It talked about here that overstating poverty is something that is done well today. It said some critics assert that the official U.S. poverty definition is inconsistent with how it is defined by its own citizens and the rest of the world. It says because the U.S. government considers many citizens statistically impoverished despite their ability to successfully meet their basic needs. It says according to 2011, a paper of poverty expert Robert Rector, of the 43.6 million Americans determined to be below the poverty level in the U.S. Census Bureau in 2009, it said the majority had adequate shelter, food, clothing, and medical care. It said in an additional paper stated that those had access to be below the poverty line in 2011 have much higher quality of living than those who were identified by the census 40 years ago as being in poverty. Now, this is the interesting thing. The federal poverty line, that was that measure that we talked about, 22,350, excludes other income other than cash, especially welfare benefits. Thus, if food stamps and public housing were successfully raising the standard of living for poverty-stricken individuals, then the poverty line figures would not shift since they do not consider these as equivalent incomes. So, you can have Section 8 housing, project housing, you can have food stamps, you can get welfare, you can get, what do they call those things that you talk about to go down and get?
Commodities.
You don't count any of that. They don't count that as if into your poverty line. So how do you know what is poor? People are eating well. There's shelter. They have many, many, many things. You do your own evaluation. And I know this troubles me, especially me, because when I drive by Section 8 housing down there that's across from Walmart, every car in there is nicer than what I drive, typically. Most all of them. Now, I'm not going to say all of them, but I'd say 90% of them. They all come out. They're sitting there waiting to pull out on a sale. Pretty sure they all have cable and all that. I have none of that stuff. It troubles me that they are considered poor, right, in this country. I'll tell you what poor is. You go to Africa. You go to Darfur. You go to people's places where their stomach is swelled out. And they're starving to death. That is poor. Would they be glad to get a one day's meal? Wouldn't that be great? And we over here would turn our nose up at that. At the churches that I've talked to, several elders at different congregations, and they have told me firsthand that people come in wanting handouts when they offer them food boxes, reject it. That's the level of poor in this country. If they were hungry, they would be groveling to get anything to eat. But and so when you try to understand to obey God's commandment, we don't want to be frivolous with our actions. I want to go. I've tried to identify some of these things that I think that is important for us to realize that goes into this poverty. There is a book that's called Air Conditioning, Cable TV, and an Xbox. What is poverty in the United States today? And I'm just going to read an abstract of it. It says, for decades, the U.S. Census Bureau has reported that over 30 million Americans were living in poverty, but the Bureau's definition of poverty differs widely from that held by most Americans. In fact, other government surveys show that most of the persons whom the government defines as in poverty are not poor in any ordinary sense of the term. The overwhelming majority of the poor have air conditioning, cable, TV, modern amenities. They are well housed and have adequate and reasonable supply of food. Some poor Americans do experience significant hardship, including temporary food shortage and inadequate housing, but these individuals are in a minority within the overall poverty population. It says here that the average poor person, as defined by the government, has a living standard far higher than the public images. So basically, that's saying we're confused. We don't understand who poor is because we're having trouble with it because what the media and the government feeds us. It says here that the home of the typical poor family was not overcrowded and was in good repair. In fact, the typical poor American had more living space than the average European. The typical poor American family was also able to obtain medical care when needed. By its own report, the typical family was not hungry and had sufficient funds during the past year to meet all essential needs. Now, when we use terms like that, I think back to what God said. They were supposed to meet the necessity of the saints, right? What is necessary for them to stay alive? It says here, poor families certainly struggle to make ends meet, but in most cases they are struggling to pay for air conditioning, cable TV bill, as well as to put food on their table. Their living standards are far different from the images of the dire deprived promoted by activists in the media. Who are the poor? I said that from the beginning, and we see this. The thing here that I wanted to outline, according to figures as of 2005, Now you're going to think this doesn't have anything to do with it, but I think it does, according to what God says. 99.9% of the poor have a refrigerator. Now we think, well, everybody has to have a refrigerator. If you didn't have any food to put in it, why would you need a refrigerator? That's who the poor are. 98.7 have a television. 98.5 have stove and oven. Goes down the list. Clothes washers, 82.6. 79.1 have either cable or satellite. More than one television in the poor is 77.8%. Personal computers, 68%. Big screen television is 27.5. That's one of the things that one of my friends argues with me. They say, well, you can go to a Goodwill and get a television for $20. Well, not the big screens. And so this thing continues on to, it just goes on and on and on. It's just amazing to me to learn. Now let me ask this question. Do we give money to street people? That's always a question that we struggle with, right? It says, Christian thinkers weigh in on whether Christians should always give money to people on the street who walk up and ask for it. Rod Sider, President of Evangelist for Social Action, Andy Bales, Chief Executive of Union Rescue Mission, offer their views on it. It says, first of all, I'm just going to hit the highlights of this. Love is acting in the best interest of others. Now, we have said this a lot, right? We would not give our four-year-old child something that could hurt them, something that we know that's in their worst interest. If you take drug addicts, you're not going to go out and buy them that next drug to get that fix, because, yes, that would help them right then, but that's not in their best interest. And we become enablers if we do such things, right? Somebody has to say no to these. It says providing money so someone can continue immoral, destructive behavior is simply not a loving act. It said a small, quick handout lets us off the hook. We give that and we think, I've done my good deed. But have we really helped the poor? Or have we helped them continue on another day to try to prey upon somebody else instead of saying, you need to do something different? This is not what God had in mind for you. It says here that we need to change our affluent lifestyles, talking about us now, in order to give more generously to effective, holistic programs. What do we mean by that? Some are desperately poor because of unjust structures that we need to challenge and correct. It says a handout, in other words, when we hand money out, lets me feel morally righteous while obscuring my obligation to work for sweeping reflection and change. And so he says these people should resolve to live far more simply and give to effective programs. In other words, we need to consistently help the poor. And so rather than hand someone money, they close here saying, we can offer to buy a person a meal or sit down and listen to the person's story. People almost always need love even more than they need money. So we have to try to identify the poor. That's the problem. Or we need to supply money to, or whatever it is we want to supply, to organizations who are better at identifying the poor. I probably think things like the Rescue Mission are actually people that are experts in identifying when they're being scammed. That's what they do for a living, and they do provide shelter, and that's good. God wanted people to be taken care of. He just didn't want people to have an enabled lifestyle that didn't cause them to have to work for what they make. And it teaches you. And sometimes it doesn't hurt to lose everything. And I know that's a terrible tragedy. If you ever listen to Dave Ramsey, he was so far in debt, he was worth millions when he was like 26 years old. But then the market went south, much like it did in 2008 until now. He lost everything. They started pulling his cars away. He foreclosed on his home. He lost it all. He lives a different lifestyle now. He pays in cash. He doesn't buy anything that he cannot afford. It taught him to live a life accountable to not only himself but to God. Now, what would he be if his possibly a wealthy parent had come in and bailed him out of all that mess? Yeah, he wouldn't have lost it all. But what would he have been after that? Would he have been that same person and just thought he could borrow his way out? He tells people all the time on his radio program, you cannot borrow your way out of debt. People want to call in and get a consolidation loan. They want to borrow this in order to pay this. That's their idea of solving the problem. When the Bible says absolutely nothing positive about debt, I don't care what you're buying, it's nothing positive about it. Now, I understand that a house is something that usually appreciates in value, and you got to live somewhere. And so, that's the only thing that Dave Ramsey thinks is he won't yell at you about for borrowing money on is a house. But anything else, if you can't pay for it with cash, you can't afford it. I've had people come in, call in, they would talk about what they wanted to buy, and he'd say, do you understand what I'm getting at? He'd say, I'm trying to get this, but I'm trying to wiggle the financing. And he would say to them, sure, I understand you. You're trying to buy something you can't afford. Now, they didn't like to hear that. They'd say, oh, sure, I can afford it. No, you can't afford it. You can borrow the money and make payments on it, but if you could afford it, you would pay cash for it. And so that's how you know. Can I afford it? I don't know. Can I reach in my checkbook and pay for it? Then we will know. So to get to the understanding of what we need to get is, well, first of all, we don't need to let our government or society dictate to us who the poor are. We want to help the poor, but we don't want to be someone who enables people to continue in a lifestyle that is not according to what God expects. Now, this man here that wrote about that deals with the poor said that we need to reduce our, he called it affluent lifestyles, and be consistently helping the poor. And when we come back next time, we're going to talk about what we can do, even as just meager, check-to-check kind of people, to help the poor.